Well, we won't have an Olympics to watch this year, but that doesn't mean you don't get a chance to see a great Olympian. This is Katie Ledecky swimming an entire lap in an Olympic-sized pool with a glass of chocolate milk on her head. And she does not spill a drop, swims all the way across the length of the pool, and then, why not in celebration, drink the milk. Jeff Saturday, your reaction.
Unbelievable. Good. First of all, I would drown swimming that far anyway, but if she could do that so gracefully, I mean, that's absolutely incredible.
I really don't know what to say about that. The staff told me yesterday we have a video of Katie Ledecky swimming the length of an entire pool with a glass of chocolate milk on her head. And I said, I have to see this. And now I've seen it. And so now we all have. And look, she's the greatest of all time in her sport. And I think that I run out of things to say about it. So with that, I will tell you, we have a terrific hour coming your way here on Get Up. I'm Mike Greenberg. We are in Bristol, Connecticut. If you're tuning in to watch First Take this morning, they'll be with you in an hour for their full 2 hours. So we're here till 11 o'clock Eastern time this morning, and we are busy. We're going to start with a live report from Tampa because we are getting up with Tampa Tom. He is on the field for the first time with his new teammates, and we have plenty to say about Tom and Gronk and all the rest of the Bucks. We'll be there live in a moment. Plus, Aaron Rodgers speaks. And let's just say, this is not going to end well in Green Bay. You need to hear this, and you will, coming up with Stephen A. And then, LeBron and the Lakers needed a good night after a sluggish start in the bubble. Did they get it? We've got all the highlights as we get up with you, starting right now. And it begins with this. Tom Brady and the Buccaneers entering day two of their two-week ramp-up to full training camp practices. Brady and his new teammates focusing on strength and conditioning in preparation for their first padded practice on August 17th. But these are pictures from this morning. Tom Brady in those new colors and his new teammates. And here's Jenna Lane, who covers the Buccaneers for us. She's live at Bucs headquarters in Tampa. So, Jenna, what have been your early observations as all these official activities are now finally underway for Brady and his new teammates?
Greeny, the timing, the accuracy, the precision, all the things that we've come to expect from Tom Brady over the last 20 years, they were all on display. Granted, we only got to watch about 30 minutes of the workout, and most of their work involved a lot of short to intermediate passes, mostly at the goal line, but we did see some deep throws at the very end of practice. You could see, though, there's already chemistry that has really started to develop with his teammates. He did not look like a guy that was joining this group of players for the first time. They looked comfortable. Their timing was pretty strong.
That's really interesting observation, and you've been around that team a while. So would you say you saw something that looked noticeably different from what you might have seen a year ago when Jameis Winston was the quarterback? And obviously so much talent, but all the interceptions and everything else. I know we're talking about half an hour of a practice here, but did you see something that looked noticeably different to you?
You know, Jameis was not a quarterback that was known for getting the ball out quickly, and he often struggled on those short to intermediate passes. He would often overthrow his receivers. You'd see that even in warm-ups just before games, but I didn't really see much of that from Brady, and I also sensed a lot of confidence from the guys that he was throwing to. You could really start to see that chemistry developing.
It's a very interesting observation this quickly. Also, you know, one of the things Bruce Arians talked about, we ran some sound last week, is how all the teammates are going to have to sort of acclimate themselves to Brady and get past the awe factor of this living legend coming into their locker room. What have you seen in that so far?
Yeah, tight end Cam Brate said that he was starstruck the first time he practiced with Brady this spring when they had those player-led workouts. And he said, we're still pinching ourselves because we just can't believe that this guy is our quarterback. And it's funny, Brate also said that when Brady first joined the team, he actually text messaged Mike Evans and Chris Godwin because he said he needed double confirmation just to make sure that it was Brady that was texting him, because he got a text from Brady that said, hey, it's Tom. Can you FaceTime me? And Cam said that he just didn't want to be FaceTiming some random strange guy thinking that it was Tom Brady. And then Tristan Wirfs, their rookie right tackle, their first round draft pick, said that Tom came up to him the other day, and Wirfs has had a ton of his family members asking him about Brady. They want to know what it's like being there with him because the rookies and the quarterbacks reported early. And Wirfs said that Tom asked him, hey man, how old are you? And he said 21. And Brady's like, man, like, I've got double experience on you. And Wirfs is just like, yeah, Like, he didn't really know what to say to that. And then he gushed, you know, he waved to me. He waved bye to me the other day. So they're still trying to get over that awe factor. But I talked to a number of Brady's former teammates, and they've all emphasized to me how important it is that they do that, because he is going to rely so, so much on their feedback, especially as he continues to learn this new offense.
Now, Brady owns clothing older than some of his teammates, and that's just something everyone is going to have to get used to. Jenna, excellent. Thank you very much this morning. We'll check in again. Again, Brady on the field with his teammates this morning in Tampa. Now to the game of the night, and it's the Lakers and the Jazz. And you know what? The Lakers needed a good night. It's been a sluggish start in the bubble for LeBron, and particularly AD and company. And last night, AD was aggressive early. Watch him here on the offensive glass, going strong off the miss from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Davis had 13 points in the first quarter, setting the tone. Second quarter, a lot of that belonged to Spida Mitchell. Look at him coming off a screen, drilling one of four threes that he would make on the night. So he was Mr. Outside, also Mr. Inside. Look at him taking it strong, finish plus the foul. He had 21 of his 33 in the first half. So the Lakers had a two-point halftime lead. Good game. Early third. Utah's now up six, but LeBron's got other ideas. Watch him getting in the lane. And we have liftoff. High percentage. Lakers shot 50% from the floor on the night. They're down to just four. Under a minute left in the quarter. Now the Lakers have taken an eight-point lead. And there's Anthony Davis showing the range. He made four threes on the night. Lakers closed the third on a 19-2 run. Fourth quarter. More LeBron on the wing. Speaking of range, that one's from way downtown. LeBron would score 22. He would add nine assists, eight rebounds, under five to go. Again showing you the range as the Lakers starting to pull away. LeBron 9 of 16 from the floor on the night. And in case you're wondering, he is very much aware of where the camera is. LeBron, how you doing? Okay, we're good here. And we go. Now we go to the less than a minute left. Lakers leading by six. Davis stepping back, making the long three, plus the foul. Davis would go for 42, 12 rebounds. Lakers win, and Anthony Davis has exactly the night that he was looking for, 42 points and 12 boards for him. There they are, Sean Farnham and Jackie Mack. And so much of the conversation around what has been something of a sluggish start for the Lakers in this bubble, Jackie, has been about Anthony Davis. What did you see from him last night, and what do you expect from him as this team now clinches the one seed and looks ahead to the playoffs?
Well, Greeny, if you're Frank Vogel, you're a really happy man this morning, because this is the kind of performance that the Lakers will need from Anthony Davis if they plan on winning the NBA championship. What I liked about him was he was just aggressive very early on in the game, very different from that game against Toronto when he only took seven shots the entire game. I love the fact that he was shooting threes, making them, but also getting to the hole. And the number, if I were Frank Vogel, that I'd be focused on is those 15 free throws, Greeny. He's shooting 13.6 free throws a game, and I know it's only three games, but that's Harden-esque. I mean, those are big numbers from the free throw line. That's what you want from your big man, especially when he shoots 90% from the free throw line.
Yeah, that's one of the places he can make a difference. He's the matchup, Sean, that nobody can handle if he's playing at his best. Is that, to you, is that the difference between the Lakers winning the championship and not?
Oh, I think it is. Look, they have glaring holes. And Jackie mentioned without Avery Bradley how they lost a key ability to defend at the point of attack. And they're not going to get that back. Their outside shooting, yeah, needs to continue to improve. But when you have Anthony Davis have the kind of night that he had last night against one of the best defensive bigs in all of the NBA in Rudy Gobert, dropping 42, and his assertiveness in the game, movement without the ball. Part of it was his teammates finding him, and the other part of it was that Anthony Davis was a lot more aggressive. He had 14 of the 27 shot attempts in the first quarter alone, and as a team, they scored 58 points in the paint on 31 shot attempts. It's that level of efficiency and ability to get to the basket that right. kind of erases some of those concerns you could have from the three-point line.
What do you need to see from the Lakers, Jackie? As I mentioned, they clinched the one seed last night, so they're just working their way towards a week from Monday, which is right. when the postseason begins. What do you want to see from them in these playoffs that says to you they're ready to win a championship in the bubble?
Well, you know what I do want to see, and we talked a lot about Anthony Davis, and we should because he had a great game last night, but let's make no mistake, Greeny, this is LeBron James's team, and he's the one that's controlling how many shots Anthony Davis gets. He's controlling the offense. We know he leads the league in assists. The one thing I would like to see going forward is LeBron has been less aggressive himself going to the rim. As you know, that's been a hallmark of his Hall of Fame career. This year has been a bit of an exception because he's been more of a facilitator. I'd like to see LeBron impose his will on the game going to the rim a little more.
How about you, Sean? Give me 30 seconds here. What do you want to see from the Lakers as far as X's and O's that you think gives them their best chance to win?
No, I think it's going to come down to defense. Are they going to be able to defend as a unit because they don't have that initial guy? Outside of LeBron James, we saw how he was able to stop the Clippers in the final possession. When they're dialed in the defensive end, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, they're great, but they need somebody else. Spider Mitchell last night was able to get anywhere he wanted, when he wanted against the Lakers, and that's going to be a problem with some of those guards in the Western Conference. So that's what I'm focused on. I'm not worried about LeBron turning it on. It's postseason time for LeBron. They got the number one seed. The King will return very shortly.
John Farnham, Jackie Mack, thank you both for getting up with us talking some basketball early this morning. As we continue, two early exits from the playoffs. Lamar Jackson looking to change the postseason narrative. I'll tell you why the narrative makes no sense as this hour continues. And then, will anybody sign Antonio Brown? One team not ruling it out. We'll tell you which team it is and whether or not it makes sense as we continue to get up with you on ESPN. We are back on Get Up and Let's Run the Bases through action from the majors yesterday. The Phillies returned from a week-long layoff, and that's what was waiting for them. Gerrit Cole, who allowed one run in six innings. Yankees win again, 6-3 the final. They hit three home runs. Aaron Judge didn't hit any of them, so his streak is over. But the Yankees are now 8-1 on the year. In the National League, the hottest team is the Cubs. That's Chris Bryant hitting his first home run of the season. Chicago beating the Royals by a 2-0 score. Bryant missed the last two games because of an illness. He tested negative for COVID-19. They're 8-2, the Cubs are on the early start. And then the Braves, this is terrible. They lost more than a game last night against the Mets. That is their young pitching star, Mike Soroka, going down for the year, tearing his right Achilles. That was in the third inning after throwing a pitch to J.D. Davis. So they lose a lot more than just their game yesterday against the Mets. Meanwhile, today we have three more games for you on ESPN and the ESPN app. Pirates, Twins, 2 Eastern, Mets and Nationals after that. And then we cap it off tonight. Mike Trout returns as the Angels are in Seattle to take on the Mariners. Plenty of baseball coming your way today on ESPN. Meanwhile, we turn our attention to football, where free agent wide receiver Antonio Brown, now we know the details, suspended 8 games to start the upcoming season. Could he find his way onto a team like the Seahawks? Here's Coach Pete Carroll saying this about general manager John Schneider and AB.
He's all over it. He knows what's going on right now and as much as you can. And it remains a, you know, it's a very complex situation. And we just need to see where it fits somewhere down the road.
So that's sort of not closing any doors whatsoever. For those of you just joining us, Tim Hasselbeck, Jeff Saturday, Kimberly Martin with us early this morning. Kimberly, I'll start with you. What do you think? Now, it's 8 games is what the suspension is. So that was one of the things that was sitting out there for teams trying to make a decision on Antonio Brown. They had no way of knowing what they were getting. Now at least they know that much. What do you think of the idea of him joining the Seahawks?
I think it's a real possibility. What the NFL has taught us is that if you have enough talent, there's a spot for you on some roster. So AB, we know AB is talented. Players advocate for him behind the scenes, work out with him in the offseason. So the fact that the door was left open by Pete Carroll and company, that I would not be shocked if he ends up in Seattle or somewhere else.
It's a place that makes some sense to me, Jeff Saturday, as I turn to you, because they seem to have in place some of the things you would want. A well-established head coach and Pete Carroll, who's known to deal with personalities. You've got a very well-established quarterback and Russell Wilson, who obviously is in control of the whole situation. Those feel like two important factors here. What do you think of the fit?
Yeah, I think it's actually a really good fit. I mean, you think about a team that just made a huge trade for Jamal Adams, and everybody's asking, hey, would that put them over the top, make them a true Super Bowl contender? I think you bring Antonio Brown in on the field, he definitely improves your football team and your chances to take it to the next level. Now, it's what do you get off the field that is really the concern, and that's the part that Pete Carroll is talking about. We'll have to see how this thing kind of evolves through these 8 weeks. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I think he had retired again, and then he'd come back. Now we get the suspension. So the ebbs and flows of this for them are going to be, hey, what's our need at the moment? We got a long way to get there. But I can tell you, a head coach like Pete Carroll with Russell Wilson in the locker room, if they feel like he could be a big addition, I think that'd be the type of veteran-led football team that could handle Antonio Brown.
It's an interesting thought. Tim Hasselbeck, let's just put this into a hypothetical. They did just trade for Jamal Adams. Mm-hmm. If they were to sign Antonio Brown and he shows up starting week 9 and for the most part holds everything together, does that change your perspective on this being a Super Bowl team?
Oh, yes, for sure. You just think about what Russell Wilson did with the wide receivers he had a year ago. You know, going into the season, so many question marks about what DK Metcalf would actually be. Tyler Lockett had been injured. And so you look at Russell Wilson, he played at an MVP level and made everyone around him so much better. Now put in a wide receiver that really does a great job of making the quarterback better. And so I would expect Russell Wilson to be able to play well, you know, say for the first half of the season before you would even get your hands on Antonio Brown in that offense. So, yeah, on the field, things held together for sure. I mean, he makes any team better if he is kind of being a good teammate. The big question ends up being, can he be a good teammate? That's the biggest concern. I think that's the biggest hangup.
Jeff Saturday, if you're in a locker room right now, and I assume this doesn't happen often, but if the coach or the general manager walked up to you and said, you think we should do this? What would you tell him?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'd tell them be patient. You know, the 8 weeks will tell us a lot. I wouldn't want to make any move right now. I'd want to see how these 8 weeks transpire. Where are we as a football team? There's going to be a lot of evolution even within your football team. Again, remember, this is the shortest offseason anybody has had. There's a lot of moving factors going on. I wouldn't do anything today. I would wait and see kind of the way that Antonio Brown carries himself over the 8 weeks and where my team sits. I would not try to make the decision today.
All right, Kimberly, to sort of finish it up here on this, what have you been hearing about interest in him now that there is clarity? What is your sense of the level of interest that teams around the sport have in him?
Well, keep in mind, there's also COVID, right? You know, there are a lot of uncertainties with rosters, guys that potentially could get sick or are sidelined. I think, again, the fact that he's as talented as he is, and we have to take a wait-and-see approach when it comes to how the season plays out, how many games, people are intrigued by Antonio Brown. But again, it's all the off-the-field question marks. That's the big thing.
Those will always be there. Of that, there is no doubt. But it has now that there's clarity in his eligibility, it has to be tempted, especially for teams like Seattle that might be just that one player away from winning a championship. Guys, I'd love to keep talking about this, but right now, I insist we talk about golf, which is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. And this week, it makes sense because this week, it's the PGA Championship. First major we've had in what feels like a very long time. And it's Tiger Woods' fourth attempt to earn his 83rd career PGA Tour victory and his 16th major. With a win, he'd become the first player in tour history to win a major in four different decades. Of course, all the action will be on ESPN start at the end of the week. And here's Tom Rinaldi, who joins us live from Harding Park in San Francisco. Tom, I think I speak for the entire audience when I say, where are you standing and what is going on around you?
No, we haven't actually decided to come and play the British Open here and report from the moors in northern Scotland. I can tell you we're just socked in on the fog, by the fog here along Lake Merced. You know the old truth, Greeny, which is, right, the coldest winter I ever spent was summer in San Francisco. Don't know that we'll quite touch 61 here today,
right,
but we'll be ready.
And that's not good for Tiger. All kidding aside, we can joke about how unpleasant the weather looks there, but that obviously is not good for Tiger and his back. Let me ask you what you've seen from him since he arrived on Sunday. How does he look?
Arrived on Sunday, played 18 holes then in sunshine and crisp temperatures. On Monday, played 9 holes, the front 9, Greeny, and saw the weather change significantly, probably dropped nearly 15 degrees just in the time that he was out there. The reason that you note it, and smartly so, is because of Woods' back. He is someone who needs to be limber and stretched out as much as he can to avoid back stiffness, which haunted him earlier in this season and then kept him out for an extended period of time. And then that ended, of course, the long pause when the tour had to go on pause before resuming. So the weather will be a factor here. How he's looked overall is pretty sharp, in particular with his irons, Greeny. Wayward tee shots, yes. But he's also had Matt Killen, a putting coach, with him yesterday, checking out his work on the greens, if you will, and how sharp he is. He said that's one area he's really had to work on in getting back to competition.
Now, there are a lot of people, Tom, as you know, who don't really follow the sport. They just follow Tiger. And those people may not realize, because they got to see him in that, you know, match with Brady and Peyton and everything else, that he's barely played. I mean, since the tour resumed, he has barely played. How should we expect that rust, if you will, as far as tournament golf is concerned, to impact him at this major championship?
Barely played does not overstate it at all, Greeny, when you consider he's barely been in competition here in 5.5 months as he enters this major championship. And after an indifferent finish at Memorial, the one event that he's played since the tour resumed, it's now in its 9th week, he came back in week 6, he did say that he needed reps. When he was asked if he needed competitive reps, he simply said reps. So he chose to play at Medalist in South Florida at his own home practice area there in Jupiter. But Woods is quick to admit, Greeny, that that's very different than the fire of competition and the adrenaline needed. And where it showed up most, he said, was in short game and putting. The green complexes have been completely rebuilt here at Harding Park since he last played more than a decade ago at the 2009 President's Cup, when he was utterly dominant. He also won here 15 years ago. But Greeny, it will be an open question as to how he performs comes Thursday.
All right, Tom, I'm going to try my best to send you a supply of umbrellas and all sorts of other things that it looks like you will be requiring for the duty this weekend, but we're looking forward to it. Thanks very much, Tom Rinaldi, getting up early out there in San Francisco. Harding Park, the site of this weekend's major championship. All right, coming up here, a big night for LeBron and the Lakers, and he didn't want to talk about it. You will hear why time was on his mind in a message that was much bigger than basketball. We'll talk about that with Stephen A. Smith next. We'll also talk about this, Aaron Rodgers. Let's just say this is not going to end well in Green Bay after you hear what he had to say yesterday. Stephen Smith on all of that and more next on Get Up. We are back on Get Up, and the NBA is back in the bubble. Let's run the floor through some of last night's action. Starting with the Sixers, Shake Milton hit a go-ahead three with less than 10 seconds to go. Philly hung on to beat San Antonio 132-130. Milton had 16 points after scoring none in Philly's loss to the Pacers Saturday. It was a career night for Michael Porter Jr., helping the Nuggets to a big win over another Western contender, Denver, beating OKC by 8 in overtime. A career-high 37 points and 12 boards from Porter Jr. They also got a triple-double from Nikola Jokic. And Zion Williamson scored 23 points in 25 minutes, won the battle against fellow rookie Ja Morant. Pelicans beat the Grizzlies by 10. Pelicans now 2.5 back of Memphis for the number 8 seed in the playoffs with 5 games left in this regular season. And we open the hour with the Lakers clinching the top seed in the West with an 8-point win over the Jazz. Anthony Davis exploded with 42 and 12. LeBron had 22 points, 8 boards, 9 assists. But after the game, LeBron was talking about the larger purpose the league is serving in the bubble.
You know, I was thinking about the other day when we were when we played the Raptors, and we kneeled for 2 national anthems. And I think it was a little bit over 4 minutes. And we actually, as a unit, as a team, had to switch our knees over from one knee to the other knee because they started to get sore, started hurting a little bit, you know. And that's just a little over 4 minutes. And you think about 8 minutes and 46 seconds, you know, of an officer having his knee in someone's throat for that long. Video or no video, it doesn't matter. No one deserved to lose their life when it could have been prevented, from what I've seen and from what the world has seen. So, you know, that's what the T-shirt is all about, is the world is watching. You know, everyone knows the time. Everyone knows what's going on. You saw all the, great protests that went on, throughout the whole world, supporting us here in America, but more importantly, supporting George Floyd and his family. That's what it was about.
Powerful words from LeBron James as we cross the bottom of the hour. Mike Greenberg here with Get Up on ESPN. Stephen A. Smith joins us, and they're a half an hour away from a full edition of First Take. And so, Stephen A., I just would love to give you the floor and let you react to those really powerful and thoughtful comments from LeBron last night.
Well, they were incredibly powerful, and props to LeBron James, to Kyle Lowry, to Russell Westbrook, and many others that we've seen speaking, particularly during post-game since the season resumed last Thursday. All of these guys have spoken. They've basically regurgitated the same message, which is a very, very powerful one. We had a modern-day lynching as far as we're concerned. You don't just have to hang from a noose or to be lynched. Guess what? You can be lynched by having a knee on your neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, especially when the last two-plus minutes, George Floyd was not even responding. And still, the officer kept his knee on George Floyd's neck. So it's an incredibly powerful message that you want to regurgitate and to repeat on many, many occasions, because you don't want our society to forget. Certainly, there was a racial protest and things of that nature. There was an uproar that resonated throughout this nation because we saw how unfair and how grotesque that was. And we had a lot of folks, particularly in white America, who stood up and recognized how egregious that was and said, we want to listen, we want to hear, and we want to learn from this and move forward together as a nation, which obviously is the proper message that needs to be sent. So I applaud LeBron James and all the NBA players for saying what they said, but it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop with just raising awareness. It stops when we're able to implement things that says we're doing something about it. For example, federal legislation designating police brutality against an unarmed black man a federal hate crime, doing various other things in terms of connecting with lobbyists and going on Capitol Hill. And just putting pen to paper and making sure that laws are implemented to disincentivize people for even thinking of doing something so egregious. Those are the kind of things that I think need to happen going forward. I think these players, with their wealth, with their cachet, with their notoriety and fame, have tremendous, tremendous power to influence those things. So again, I applaud what they're doing. I just hope it doesn't stop by raising awareness. I hope that folks keep on pushing forward to make real change take place, because thus far, as beautiful as these things are to see, in the end, they are symbolic gestures if it amounts to nothing else coming from it.
Yeah, that's well said, and I agree with you. And I think the way they've managed to keep that at the forefront while they've resumed their season has been remarkable, one of the many remarkable accomplishments for that league in that bubble. And so to segue to the basketball piece of this, Stephen A., we spoke yesterday and a lot about Anthony Davis and just how significant he is in the Lakers' chances of winning a championship. And at least for last night, it was good news. 42 points, and he asserted himself, and he was dominant. And Jackie Mack was talking a lot this morning with us here about the number of foul shots that he has been taking, averaging almost 14 free throws a game since they've come back. What are you seeing from Anthony Davis now, and what does he need to be for the Lakers to win it this year?
Well, I'm seeing an elevated level of aggression, and he deserves props for that. We all know he's one of the top five players on the planet. He's the real deal. But in the same breath, it's a little bit easier to do that against the Utah Jazz than it's going to be to do that against the Los Angeles Clippers. I've repeatedly said this. It's not about the points that he scores, because he's going to do that against anybody. It's how he does it that's going to tell the story. The more aggressive you are, particularly attacking the basket, the more you'll be able to neutralize what they're going to throw at you defensively. I'm talking about a team like the Los Angeles Clippers or the Houston Rockets, who are anticipated to be one of the teams standing in their way. We got to throw Denver into the equation as well with the Joker. You've got to attack. You've got to make sure you get these people in foul trouble. You've got to assist in doing to them what they plan on doing to you if you're Anthony Davis, and that is wear you down. When I spoke to the Clippers at the beginning of the season, again, they acknowledged he's one of the top five players in the world. They said he's the real deal. Here's the flip side. If we get physical with him and get him to resort to shooting jump shots and what have you, that leaves us fresh in the fourth quarter. We're devoid of foul trouble, and we can really amp it up with no concerns whatsoever, because we'll be fresh and able to go up against them. So Anthony Davis heard those words. Anthony Davis knows that. He came off First Take and acknowledged that he heard those things, and he's got to make sure that he's ready to offset that by being in complete attack mode. And then remember the loss, and I've got to give props to my man Jalen Rose here, because with the minute Avery Bradley elected not to join the Lakers for the restart of this NBA season, the bottom line is you've got an elite on-ball defender that's been taken away from you. And what we saw last night against the Utah Jazz was Donovan Mitchell being able to get where he wanted, when he wanted to. And that's a problem. You don't want that to happen to you if you're the Los Angeles Lakers. So you're going to need to amp up your defensive prowess as well. Anthony Davis could do it on the front court. Plus, he has the quickness and athleticism to get out and defend perimeter players. But he's going to need help. And not having Avery Bradley there and not having Rajon Rondo there is definitely huge blows to the Los Angeles Lakers. So I'll keep my eyes on that. And it's going to call for Anthony Davis to be that much more aggressive to offset those losses.
Now, he feels like the most important player in the Western Conference. Lakers, by the way, clinched the one seed last night. All right, Stephen A., I've been waiting all morning long to play this soundbite for you, because we all know your feelings about Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers yesterday got up there and he had to respond to the comments that his coach had made about his future in Green Bay. And Rodgers did not disappoint. This is what Aaron said.
I think that if I retire on the team's, you know, timeline, then all is well. But if they're looking to move on before I'm ready to be done playing, you know, then there comes an impasse at that point. I can control, you know, my play and my performance and my approach and my leadership. But at some point, you know, there's other factors involved.
If I retire on the team's timeline, then everything will be okay. Stephen A., I'm an expert in very few things, but one of them is passive-aggressive comments, and that's an excellent one. What is your reaction to what Aaron Rodgers said yesterday?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is saying that he plans on moving on, that he doesn't anticipate retiring as a Green Bay Packer, because they've sent the message that, guess what, he's not the future. Jordan Love or somebody else is the future. And I don't blame him for feeling that way. He was far more kinder and obviously significantly more passive aggressive than I would have been. Let me be very, very clear. The Green Bay Packers, in my estimation, should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. Aaron Rodgers did not have a great year. A great year, Greeny, a bad year to him, rather, was 26 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, over 4,000 yards passing. This is what this man does, okay? I think that he's still one of the great quarterbacks in the game today. I think he has several years left in him. And if you're the Green Bay Packers and you're fresh off of winning 12 or 13 games last season, rather, how is it that you decide that you want to improve your team for the immediate future by drafting the quarterback of the future while Aaron Rodgers is still there. You don't think you could have used another receiver? You don't think you could have used another tight end or running back, somebody on the defensive side of the ball? This is Aaron freaking Rodgers. And I'm not going to blame Coach Matt LaFleur because he's the coach and he has executives over him that have made these selections, but he ain't innocent in all of this either. It's bogus. It's a bunch of nonsense. I don't give a damn what we hear from the Green Bay Packers. As far as I'm concerned, they should be ashamed of themselves. This is Aaron Rodgers. Now, if the man is a scrub and he's clearly lost it, or the twilight of his career has arrived, like Peyton Manning his last year in Denver or something like that, that makes sense. I challenge any football aficionado you can find to tell me that you're looking at Aaron Rodgers and you're saying, oh, he only has a year or 2 years left. Of course, that's not true. He's got several years left in him, but the Green Bay Packers have never taken care of him. They've never looked out for him. They've never buffered him with elevated talent on this roster. They have asked him for the last decade to pretty much carry the Green Bay Packers. It was about three things in Green Bay: Aaron Rodgers, Clay Matthews' hairdo, and cheese. That's all that mattered with the Green Bay Packers. And somehow, some way, you're going to come to Aaron Rodgers and act like, oh, my goodness, we got to prepare to move on from you. It's disgraceful. And if I was him, I'd tell him to kick rocks. He should ask for a trade now, as far as I'm concerned, but it would cost too much money, and I understand how implausible that is. So he's got to wait a couple of years for that. He'll be there for a couple of more years, and then Aaron Rodgers is gone and good riddance.
I'm with you. He is himself the last offensive skill position player that they drafted in the first round, and they drafted him 15 years ago. They haven't taken a single one the time that he's been there, Steve.
That's right. I know that. I knew this. I said this on First Take. I've said it religiously. You know what I feel? He's a bad man. Make no mistake about it. And the way that he is treated by this organization, you would think that when you have a superstar of his caliber, because he is a superstar, if you've got somebody that legit for so many years, because he was widely considered the best until Patrick Mahomes arrived. I'm talking about talent, not resume, because we all know Brady has the resume. But talent-wise, at the quarterback position, you didn't put anybody above Aaron Rodgers until Patrick Mahomes came along, okay? Yet and still, this man year after year after year has had to carry the Green Bay Packers on his shoulders with little to no help. I'm not saying that Cobb and Jordy Nelson and those boys couldn't play, but let's understand, Aaron Rodgers elevated their level of play. It's really a damn shame that you would have a talent like this and you would treat him this way. If you get at somebody like him, what you do is say, okay, what do we need to get around him to win? You know why the Chiefs gave Patrick Mahomes $500 million, but $141 million in guaranteed, and they locked him up for years to come? You know one of the reasons it was easier for them to do that? Because they're pursuing other Super Bowls. You know why they're pursuing other Super Bowls? Because Tyreek Hill hasn't gone anywhere. Travis Kelce hasn't gone anywhere. That's why. Because you surrounded him with pieces. When has Aaron Rodgers been surrounded with pieces like that? Tell me when that happened, because I'm waiting.
It has literally never happened, and at this point, it doesn't seem likely that it's going to. Stephen A. Smith in 18 minutes. First Take coming your way for a full 2 hours here on ESPN. Thank you, Stephen A. We needed to get in the one bad man comment from the morning. Meanwhile, as we continue, I'm going to show you what Lamar Jackson has in common with Peyton Manning and why all of the Lamar haters need to just shut up. We'll do that after this moment for Sneaky Hembo. This one's for Saturday. Here we go. Before the 2019 Ravens, which was the last 14-win team that failed to win a playoff game? Won at least 14 regular season games, or what won and done in the playoffs? That's the question. The answer is coming up next. Get up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and it's time for Sneaky Hembo, and this one is for Jeff Saturday. Before last year's Ravens, which was the last team to win 14 games or more in the regular season and then fail to win a playoff game? Saturday, you're on the spot.
Ooh, I don't know I'm going to go Colts. Were we 14-2 and didn't win one? I feel like Hembo may be taking a shot at me right here, so I'm just going to see.
Well, the shot is indirect. The correct answer is the 2011 Packers, who went 15-1, lost to the Giants in the divisional round, and then signed you. They then signed Jeff Saturday the next offseason. They figured you were the answer to getting them over the playoff hump. All right, Jeff, sit tight for me just a minute. I have a little something I need to get off my chest. Do you know what I'm getting a little tired of hearing about? All the things Lamar Jackson hasn't done. Before we get to those, let me mention a few that he has. Since he became Baltimore's starter in week 11 of his rookie year, he is the winningest quarterback in the NFL. He's thrown more touchdowns than Tom Brady, fewer picks than Patrick Mahomes, and he has rushed for more yards than Saquon Barkley on 52 fewer carries. In the span of 1 month last year, he beat Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, and Deshaun Watson by an average of 22 points per game. And I know he's lost two playoff games. You want to make that the be-all, end-all? Well, fine. Let's talk about a quarterback who started his career 0 for his first three playoff games, despite his team being favored in two of them. He completed less than 50% of his passes in those games, and the third one, his team lost 41-0 to the Jets. That quarterback was Peyton Manning. He turned out okay. By the way, he was 26 when he lost that game. Lamar Jackson is 23. And for what it's worth, Lamar was sacked 7 times in his first playoff game, and he had 4 balls dropped in his second. But that's not the point. What I think is going on here is a case of a lot of people not believing what their eyes are seeing, mostly because he is making them look bad. The whole league passed on this guy. Respected evaluators told him to play a different position. Then he went out and he was the unanimous MVP in his second year. He made a lot of decision makers look even worse than the linebackers who fall down trying to tackle him. So the moral of this story, my friends, is simple. There's nothing so terrible about having been wrong about Lamar Jackson. Most people were. The real mistake is failing to admit it now. That's what I think. Let me bring my crew in here. And Saturday, I cut you off there, so I'll let you have the first crack at the response. You obviously know Peyton Manning better than anybody. What do you think?
I love what you said. I mean, it's true. Listen, quarterbacks get so much blame, and then they get so much adoration when teams win. But ultimately, you look at last year, you know, Lamar, they're running all over the Baltimore defense. Lamar doesn't play defense, right? So you can only do kind of what you're slated to do. He has had an incredible start of his career. I know that he's looking to do bigger things, and I know they want to win football games. But you got to get there first, right? You got to continue doing what he's doing. He is progressing along in his career. I have a ton of respect for what he's done. But when you look at it, playoffs aren't always decided by just quarterbacks alone. I know we love to lump it in there. Timmy especially loves to do that. But at the end of the day, it takes 52 other guys on the team to make this thing go, especially playoff football.
Well, I was going to go to Kimberly next, but you keep taking shots at poor Tim. So I will give him the next chance at it here. Tim, and I want to make clear what I'm referring to. I'm referring to people putting him in the second tier of quarterbacks, ranking him 6th or 7th in the league after he just had one of the greatest seasons of all time in his second year at the age of – he didn't turn 23 until January, but that's what I think. I don't want to influence you. What do you think, Tim?
No, listen, whatever you think about Lamar Jackson, like, and you said it, like your eyes aren't lying to you when you're watching him do the incredible things that he's doing. So whatever you thought about him from his time at Louisville and how he projected in the National Football League, we've now seen him in the NFL and we've seen what he can do. And trying to justify a point by 2 playoff losses is really an absurd way to create your argument when you factor in what Jeff is alluding to, which is, you know, Derrick Henry rushes for 30 times for 195 yards in a playoff game where the Titans win. Ryan Tannehill throws 14 passes and Lamar Jackson throws for 360 plus yards, rushes for another 140 plus. Like that, the Ravens didn't lose that playoff game because of poor play out of Lamar Jackson. So I don't think you can minimize it to that. Much like Peyton Manning, if Lamar Jackson can stay healthy and be healthy for the postseason with their style of play, then he's going to win his fair share of postseason games.
And Kimberly, what do you think of my idea here that I'm trying to figure out why everyone seems to want to diminish what it is he's doing? And what I have come up with is the idea that he's made so many people look bad that I think that they're defensive. I don't know if they're doing it on purpose, but I think that they are just not willing to believe what their eyes are seeing because it is so far from what their expectation was.
The thing that has always bothered me about the Lamar discussion, the goalposts always move. They always move. It's like, oh, this guy, he should be a wide receiver. He should be a running back. He's not really a quarterback. Then he comes out and he's like, okay, he's showing people that he can actually play the position. He's not what we're used to seeing. And I think people balk at that. But the kid consistently defies expectations. But the minute he slips up, it's like, what did I say? Yeah, Lamar's not very good, is he? And that's been the problem since he entered the league. He's a young kid. He's 23 years old. The window for the Ravens is what concerns me and his rookie contract, because they've gotten to the playoffs twice and haven't gotten it done. but not because simply because Lamar isn't good. It, the whole team, I was at that game and I watched Derrick Henry run all up and through that defense. So it's really not on Lamar, as the other guys are saying. But the expectations for him are so high, and that is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, to sort of put a ribbon on it here, I think there's also the Mahomes effect that is sort of on everything.
Right.
No one is Mahomes. And if you're going to compare anyone to I'm the first one to say, for all the things I just said about Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes is, just as far as pure talent, the best I've ever seen. And I think to some degree, that is also – It hangs over the entire league because people look at it and say, well, he's not Patrick Mahomes. And, Jeff, in my view, no one is Patrick Mahomes.
No, you make a great point, right? Like, what are we comparing him to? And also think about with what Patrick Mahomes was given when he came in the league with Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy and all the different skill position guys he has with him. And you think about Lamar Jackson. They've retooled their entire offense around Lamar Jackson, but that takes time. And then, obviously, we talked about the playoff. He couldn't have played any better in the last playoff game. I don't care what quarterback you are. You're hanging your hat, you're going to win most games with him playing at that level. I think to your point, the comparisons are unfair. This kid's had a great start to his career, and he will win playoff games in the NFL, no doubt.
Timmy, you look like you have something to say. Got 15 seconds. Go.
Well, yeah, I was just a little bit of pushback on it somewhat. I think the concern is, especially as we project things forward about how, you know, many opportunities he may have in the postseason is, I think everyone would agree he gets hit too much. He had a season where he was hit over 200 times last year. Cam Newton's never been hit over 184 times in a single season. It's the sustainability and opportunities in the future that I think you can still have a legitimate concern about, even if you believe when he's healthy, he's maybe as good as anybody that's playing right now.
All that and much more going on in the world of sports, which means First Take will be busy. They're about 5 minutes away, Max and Stephen A. debating whether Aaron Rodgers is still a top three quarterback in the NFL. That's next on ESPN. And we're out of time. We'll see you tomorrow. Get up on ESPN.